Good evening and welcome. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Tim has the week off. Tonight, we're going to talk with a very special guest. Our guest, Audrey Starborn Hewins, is joining us to discuss her life as a lifelong alien abductee and experiencer. We'll be getting into that in a few moments. A little bit later on this week, on Friday, we're going to talk about haunted toys, possessed possessions. Oh, yeah, it's the stuff of nightmares, kids. We're going to talk about that. So you're going to probably want to prepare yourself. And we've got a creepy theater of the mind for you on Friday as well, which will probably push away all happy thoughts of movies like Toy Story. And instead, you'll find yourself padlocking those toys into closets and chests at night when it's time to go to bed. Let's get into tonight's show, though. Audrey, our guest, is an identical twin born in 1973, and she is a lifelong alien abductee experiencer. She's here with us this evening to talk about her amazing life and what has been going on. Audrey Starborn Hewins, thank you for joining us tonight on Beyond the Darkness.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
All right, let's just get right into this. What is your earliest memory of encountering these aliens?
Well, our earliest memories, and I say are, because I've got an identical twin sister named Debbie. We've been having these encounters since we were very young. In fact, I remember one specific time where we were actually standing up, hanging onto the crib, and, threw a stuffed animal at them. And they, they picked up the stuffed animal and actually let us bring it with them. So, in the early years, it was pretty much normal for us. We didn't know that this didn't happen to everyone when they went to bed. Nobody told us, it wasn't real, it was a dream. So it was just a part of our nightly activities. It wasn't until we got a little bit older and started to talk about it to our family that we started to fear it, and that's a lot of what I deal with working with experiencers now, and we'll get to that later. But when we were told that it was just, we had active imaginations, it was just a dream, we would begin to get very scared to go to bed, and we would say, the bald man's coming, and of course, we had each other. So we began not to talk about it so much with anyone else. We'd, speak about it with each other. And, I remember we'd be in our bunk beds, and one of us would stay awake while the other one slept and try to, be on watch, and to see if we could maybe protect the other. And, it never happens that way. They come in, and we'd see a pale blue light that would fill the room. Once in a while, they would project voices that would sound like our parents, almost as if to comfort us as they were coming into the room. And then the paralysis would set in. We couldn't talk and move anything except for our eyes. So, it was very scary in the early years. So, but we were lucky to have each other. So that's, what I am blessed with. A lot of people go through this by themselves, and I couldn't imagine that.
Knowing what you know now, I'm sure you've spoken with family members. Are there generations of your family that feel that they've had these same experiences?
Well, yes. And, with the research that I've been doing with Starborn Support, and I work closely with Free and Kathy Martin, she's a really close friend. And we do a lot of studies and working with thousands of individuals. And it does seem to be a pattern that it goes through family lines. Now, not everyone remembers right away. And, things will start to activate in later in life or when they start to talk about it. My mother really, was skeptical at first. They came across our journals as kids. We used to keep very detailed journals with pictures of them and adventure stories, and those journals have since disappeared from a secure location. But the pictures in the journals were of the Grays. So my mom was in the grocery store one day, and this was when in the 80s when Whitley Strieber's book Communion came out, and it happened to be in the checkout line, and she, you know, almost passed out when she saw it, so she picked it up right away, and, you know, of course, that was an epic book that really portrayed what they looked like, and I think, you know, many people saw the cover of that book, and it triggered some memories, but that's when she started to really question what was going on, and, you know, we had no idea, and we're kind of just suppressing, and a lot of the memories, it's, you know, the screen memories are put in, if you're familiar with alien abduction, and, you know, a lot of it's forgotten when we're returned. So we went throughout our, you know, teenage years kind of in denial, I would say, and then, you know, the abductions got worse as we, you know, became women and became, you know, we became subjects of experiments, and they would, you know, remove samples, and I had my first surgery for unexplained scarring in my ovaries and uterus when I was about 12 years old, so there was some what seems to be reproductive materials removed, which is, you know, also very common, we find with people talking about it with the hybrid program. So, you know, it was scary then. We started to really
It was scary then? It's not still scary?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, well, it was scary as kids, but, you know, like I said, we kind of suppressed it and, you know, put it, as many people do, it almost becomes a memory like a dream, you know, and you just want to forget. And like any kind of childhood trauma, it's normal for the brain to, you know, kind of trigger that with a response. So everything came back. We got very confused. We didn't know what the graves were. We didn't see the book communion. We had no idea what was going on. We ended up getting lucky and talking about it with someone who happened to have a connection to MUFON and sent us to the local a MUFON investigator in Massachusetts. And we met with this man, and he ended up working with us separately and doing hypnosis sessions, which, you know, some really bizarre things happened during the sessions. And we did it over a period of probably, you know, I'd go in 1 week, Debbie would go in the next. And, you know, I did it probably twice, and it scared me so much that I couldn't take it. I didn't want to deal with it. I just wanted to just run from it. And I mean, it was a panic. What is this? And what am I going to do? Helpless feeling. So, you know, hypnosis is a great tool when used properly. And, you know, but the person really has to be ready to deal with that. You know, it opened up that box. And from then on, there was no hiding it. It was there. So we ended up having a very strange encounter after the hypnosis sessions. We had gotten...
But wait, before we get there, let's reel back, because we're kind of jumping in and out of timelines here, and I want to kind of get a full understanding. You believe your first encounters were when you were still babies in the crib. You remember having these moments with blue light and these bald figures coming into your room.
Yeah, there was usually two of them. One was taller, one was shorter. They were dressed in what appeared to be black capes, hooded capes. They would come in and, you know, like I said, we'd not be able to move or scream and basically be passed out and, you know, wake up. Sometimes we'd be in opposite bunk beds in each other's pajamas, so my mother would come in and think we played a joke on her, but of course she could tell us apart, so she'd giggle about it. But you know, we were put back in the wrong clothes and in the wrong beds at times when we were little.
Oh my gosh. And did your family have an idea that this was going on at that time?
No, again, like I said, we would start to talk about it, and, you know, they would say that it was just dreams and really, you know, try to calm us, obviously, and began to say, you know, there's no such thing, you know, that's just a dream. So we just stopped, like I said, really going to them, and we turned in to each other and really you know, started writing the journals as soon as we were old enough to, starting with pictures.
But how did they explain away you being in the wrong cribs, wearing different outfits?
Right.
Did she just think you two were screwing around and swapping outfits, or what did she think was going on?
Yeah, like I said, they would think we were playing a joke on them, you know, because we used to dress in our, we used to switch clothes in school and switch classes and stuff, you know, so it was kind of like that. When we were really little, you know, we'd be in the same crib, so it was, and probably dressed the same. You know, it wasn't until we were in our bunk beds and stuff that, you know, they started to think that we were switching clothes and getting in each other's bunk bed, you know, and we would be freaked out, obviously, thinking I'm on the bottom bunk and finding out I'm on the top bunk. You know, there were several times where it feels like, you know, you missed that last step, you know, when you go to get out of bed and there was no floor. So, it was quite disturbing, and the sense of no control was, you know, the scariest part. You know, I mean, there really wasn't a lot of memories. We remembered them coming, remembered the lights, and you know, then it was just kind of like a blackout. So we'd write what we could remember, and, you know, definitely drew a lot of pictures of the bald men, and they were, you know, the grays with the big eyes, the typical ones that you see. So, you know, like I said, until they started actually doing the experimentation on us and taking samples and so forth, that really became when, you know, we had the physical signs and the emotional trauma from that. And it was just so confusing. So,
well, if you go back and look now, do you find reports and recordings of UFO activity in that area from newspapers and really?
Yeah. In fact, the year we were born, my sister was in school here a few years back in college, and she had an assignment to look up an event that happened the year you were born. So she decided that she'd, you know, say, well, you know, we were born in Illinois, so let me see what happened, if there was any UFO activity when we were born. So it turned out that there was a huge flap in 1973, starting in Illinois, and we moved to Ohio when we were about 6 months old, and the sightings were over in Ohio. I think there was actually some kind of an FBI file that was opened up from this 1973 UFO flap in the Midwest.
So you've got all of this kind of taking place in the time, and it's documented. That's even more chilling. Have you spoken to past neighbors now and people in that vicinity? Are you finding anybody else that seemed to be going through the same thing?
Well, you know, there wasn't anybody around where we lived. It was a street called South Blackburn Road. And back in those days, it was just nothing but us, and we had one neighbor, an older couple, about a couple miles down the road. I mean, our bus stop, we'd have to take a vehicle and go because it was so far away. So we were out in the middle of nowhere, and, you know, if bad weather would come, the whole road would just wash out. So we were in a prime location for any activity without being seen. And I really, you know, we moved out of there when we were about nine, so we don't have any contact still from those days. You know, I would love to talk to somebody from Athens, Ohio in, you know, 1973 till, you know, about 83, and to see if there was any activity, you know, in Athens. So, you know, if anybody's listening, it would be a great thing. So
you haven't,
I'm sorry.
So you haven't come across, in all of your years now of dealing with this, you haven't come across with other people from that area that maybe you recognize from abductions or, you know, that have come forward to say, hey, this was going on to me and my family as well?
Well, not in Ohio, but when we moved to a town called Bridgewater, Massachusetts, which you may be familiar with, it's known as the Bridgewater Triangle. Lauren Coleman actually coined that term because of the high amount of paranormal activity in this certain area of Massachusetts. We did an episode of Monsters and Mysteries in America that focused on the Bridgewater Triangle.
Right.
There was also a documentary written about it. So it was in 1982, I guess, when we moved to Bridgewater, and it was sudden. We just kind of up and left and ended up there, and we were in Bridgewater for, say, you know, only a couple of years, and then we moved to a more quiet area, Lakeville, Massachusetts, which is still in the Bridgewater Triangle. So for most of our lives, it was in that area of high strangeness, the Bridgewater Triangle, that we had our encounters occur. And we did have a meeting with someone that we recognized from the spaceship, and that's what's so fascinating, and that's where I was going when we went backwards.
Okay. I'm curious, do you have any other do you have any other siblings at all? Or is it just you and your twin?
We have one brother. He's an older brother, 6 years older than us. And he doesn't like to talk about it. So, you know, we kind of just leave him out of it. You know, he's one of those that hasn't fully accepted any of this yet. So
do you believe
it's hard
that
to deal with, you know.
Well, he doesn't want to deal with your story, or do you believe he's had his own?
I believe there's personal experience, yes.
Okay.
That's why he's so scared about it. So, and you know, there has been conversations. So, you know, he's very familiar with it. And it's just he's got all the signs, you know, working with so many and knowing the history of families. But it was actually, in fact, we were going after we got hypnotized, and you know, I was really scared and confused.
Right, and how do you find a hypnotist for that, Audrey, if you don't mind me asking? How does one start to seek that out? I mean, it's not like there's a calling card, hey, you know, come on in, help your smoking cessation, lose weight, and find out if you've been abducted by aliens. That's not really usually part of your calling card.
Right, and that was what was so scary back then, was there was nobody. We got lucky, and we're talking to someone, I don't even remember who it was, and they heard us, you know, mention these, you know, bald men we were talking about, and they mentioned MUFON. And this was back in the early 90s, I guess, so we got a contact information. We also reached out to someone. His name's Chris Pittman, and we were able to find this man that did the hypnosis. He was a MUFON investigator for Massachusetts, and Chris Pittman actually was just beginning. He's a cryptozoologist in that area, and he was just starting out, so he was only 18, 19 years old, sitting in with the hypnotist, and, you know, it forever changed his life and, you know, really had a profound effect on him. Then once we, you know, opened that Pandora's box, there was no coming back. And I was unaware that there was more species until, you know, later on in my years, but we'll get to that later. We were actually going to a club that my brother's band was playing at one night after the hypnosis, where, you know, we're shaken up. And it's only been probably a couple weeks since the last one. And so we get my brother's band set up, and we walk into the club that he was playing at, and we opened the front door, walked in, and my brother was setting up for sound check, and the lights were all on, and we noticed somebody standing in the corner, and he was actually doing sound, the sound man. And we looked at the sound man, and he looked at us, and we realized instantly who he was, and all the memories came back, and we walked right over to him. I think I actually sat in his lap, and I said, hey, and he was like, oh, my God. And so we started talking about the experience that we shared together, and it was 10 years before we met in this nightclub. So what had happened was we were taken, my sister and I, to a craft. We were brought to this dimly lit room. It was pretty small. The walls were kind of lit blue and slanted. Had a little, what seemed like a bench, some kind of you know, shelf sticking out that we could actually sit on. And we were just sitting there confused by ourselves in this room when the door opened, and it kind of just opened out of nowhere. And there was this man standing there, and four grays brought him into this room, and then the door closed, and they just left us together. So this is how we met. Matt Moniz the first time. And, you know, it was amazing to walk in and see this man in the corner doing
Matt
sound
Moniz
for my
from
brother's
Spooky
band.
South Coast?
Yes.
Wow. All right.
And he's now, yeah, he's now our scientific advisor, so you know who he is.
Right.
And he actually came forward and is now talking about this. He came forward for the first time in 2012 about this at our first conference that we put on for experiencers. So it's great that, you know, we kept that secret for over 20 years. You know how hard that is when somebody
right.
asks how you met. And you're like, well, you know, in a bar, you know, just kind of next topic. But now, you know, he actually was on the Monsters and Mysteries episode and was speaking about it for the first time there publicly and nationally. So, yes, it was him. And it was in the 80s when we were brought into this craft. And at the time, he, I think, was living approximately 20 miles away from us, we figure, according to the timeline. So they picked him up, they picked us up, and they introduced us. And 10 years later, we walk into a room. And it was so funny because the high strangeness that surrounds this phenomenon is just, you know, you can't make it up. We're walking over to him, and my brother is saying, I'm going to do an original song for the first time that I wrote, and it's titled My UFOs Up on Blocks. You know, so we have this theme song going on about UFOs, and we're talking to Matt, and it's like, we can't make this up. I said, did you just hear what my brother's song's called? And I think that's how the subject just got broke open, wide open. And we've been close ever since, and we've been through some time. You know, we've known each other now, you know, for many, many years, and he now works very closely with us in Starborn support, and it was all for a reason, it seems, you know, because of the way things transpired over the years is just absolutely amazing. And you
now,
know,
if I could ask real quickly, Audrey, do these aliens that you encounter, are they always the same race, or have you encountered different species of aliens during these abductions?
A perfect timing for that question, because I was just going to get into that. In the beginning, it seemed to be only the grays. And then I didn't even know any other species existed. You know, it was just the grays. That was the aliens. And, you know, I didn't study this. I didn't want to know. Like I said, I ran from it. I was in total denial for many, many years. And there was a falling out that my sister and I had for the first time ever, and we're really close, being identical twins, and we had a fight, a really bad one, and I actually got up and left the state. I moved to Florida, and this was in 2003. Now, in 2004, it was only a couple months after I'd moved there, I had just got done working Daytona Bike Week. I worked for a Harley company over there, a leather company, and I had experienced, you know, Daytona Beach for the first time and didn't have time to actually enjoy it. So I went back to where I was staying with my aunt and uncle, and I said, look, I want to go to Daytona Beach. Let's go to the beach. And I also picked up a friend of mine that I had just met. I just got a job at a flower shop, and his name was Kip. And I said, let's go. We're going to Daytona Beach. So the four of us got in the car, and we drove to Daytona Beach from Alachua, Florida, in the Gainesville area. And I had always, my whole life, had a very healthy fear and respect of the ocean. And I actually was kind of weird, because I would never go in the ocean. I'd go in lakes and pools and rivers and anything like that, but the ocean had always scared me. But I was in Florida, you know, I was going to go in the water, and this was going to be, you know, the day I was brave. And Kip was enticing me, saying, come on, you can come in just, you know, up to your knees. So I did, and my aunt and uncle were sitting on the beach. Kip was in the water, and I stepped in up to my knees, and in an instant, I was pulled out by a rip current. I had no idea what was going on. All I knew was I was trying to get to the beach, and I was getting farther and farther out, and the people were becoming smaller and smaller. Kip himself was in the rip current, but he was right at the edge of it, so he was able to swim as hard as he could to go get help for me, because he saw me getting whisked out to sea. So as I'm fighting this rip current and trying to keep my head above water, I'm watching, you know, the people on the beach. Now there's hundreds of them. They're the size of ants, and there's emergency lights, and everything's flashing. And I said, well, this is all for me. I'm going to die. So, you know, it was very surreal. I was really focusing on jumping. When a rip current gets you, it'll pull back, and you're standing on the bottom of the ocean as this wave is building behind you, about ready to crash. So I was timing it and looking up, and as the wave would come down, I would jump to try to, you know, get that momentum I needed to get my head above the wave. So I was doing this as much as I could, which wasn't very much. I mean, those things are powerful. The next thing I know, I was above my body, and I was looking down at myself, and I was watching myself do this. I'm like, you know, wow, you know, I'm above my body, and I'm looking at my aunt and uncle, you know, and Kip, and thinking about my sister, and just worried about my family, and everything, like my life just flashed in front of my eyes, and it wasn't, you know, the material things or jobs I've had. No, it was my family, it was relationships, it was who I wanted to tell I loved, you know, and all of a sudden I snapped back into my body. Now, it was at this very moment when I was back in the water going, oh, great, I'm here, I got to fight, that I heard my name being called, and it was being called from behind me. Now, remember, behind me is the open ocean. So I hear Audrey, Audrey, and it, a few times my name's being called, and I turned around.
Right.
And I saw this blonde man with amazing eyes. I remember the eyes, I just kind of latched onto these eyes, and they were glowing amber. And he said, Audrey, take this rope, because this next wave is going to do us in. So he threw me this rope. I wrapped it around my wrist. And the next thing I remember, I was on the beach with five lifeguards, you know, bringing me back, and I'm coughing up water, and I'm freaking out. I pushed him off of me. I think I said something like, get off me, Baywatch boys, because I knew that this blonde had just saved me. And at that time, I believed it was a surfer trying to save me or another lifeguard. I had no idea. And I was freaking out. And I said, where's the blonde? Where's the blonde that saved me? And they said, oh, no, it took five of us swimming all we can, and you were almost Coast Guard material. And then they just took off. And it wasn't until the next day that I found out why they took off. And I'll tell you in a minute. But, you know, Kip came over, and they brought me to the hospital. Kip came in the room. He said, Audrey, I saw him. You have a guardian angel. He saved your life. I saw him. And, you know, he was also in the current, remember. So he was in the water, the one that was, you know, getting out to save me.
Right.
So he saw this man. We looked at my arm. I had rope burns. So I was convinced that it was a surfer. I thought maybe he died. You know, I was like, oh, my God. And then I started thinking about, okay, guardian angel, no. And I said, well, maybe a ghost. You know, that was much more rational.
Right.
Maybe somebody that died. And I don't know why, but I started combing through, you know, the people that have died in that area and surfboards and looking for his picture, because I'll never forget his face. You know, and I was freaking out. And I actually called a radio station and pleaded for anybody that knew about this guy who saved my life to please have him get in touch with me, because I wanted to thank him. That's all I wanted to do. Thank you for saving my life, you know, and worried that maybe he, you know, perished saving me. It really bothered me for quite some time. And I put an ad out in the personals, and, you know, when I got back to the flower shop the next day, there was newspapers spread out on our stations, Kip and I. And it said that 14 people had died that day. It was the only one that got out. That it was one of the worst rip currents that had gone up that coast ever. And it was from, I think, like all the way down, all the, you know, Fort Lauderdale and all the way up. So that's why the lifeguards took off, and, you know, three or four died right after I got out. So that was very, very surreal again. And you know, I just kept saying, why? You know, why did I get out? I don't understand.
Right.
And who was this? And, you know, and it was then that my vision started, and messages started coming in, and I just didn't feel the same. That person that I used to be, I mean, I was on a road of self-destruction because of fear. And, you know, I was drinking and just being stupid and reckless and, you know, getting in that fight with Debbie and just running somewhere I'd never been. You know, it was just a crazy bunch of years there. So So when
well,
I came
well, let's
out of
do
that
this,
ocean,
Audrey. We need to take a break.
Sure.
We'll come back. Let's talk about these messages. How was this affecting your twin sister at that time as well? What was going on in her world? And did abductions continue? We'll cover all of that when we return. All right, we'll be back. We've got more of the best in Paranormal Talk Radio coming your way. This is Beyond the Darkness.
Beyond the Darkness.
Thank you very much for sticking with us here on the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio. You can find us 5 days a week here on the best place for all podcasts. You can find us on Podcast One. And let me remind you, folks, that you want to download every episode. Just set it up so you can download it and keep them direct so you never miss an episode. Because after about 60 to 90 days, the old episodes move into the archives and you have to pay for those. And I know, you want to keep it free? Then download the shows immediately so you never miss an episode. Never miss a minute of the best in Paranormal Talk Radio by downloading those episodes right from podcastone.com and find the Beyond the Darkness banner, or go to iTunes and download us right there from iTunes. And please, if you are listening to us on iTunes, rate us and review us. That helps to spread the word and share our show with others. As long as you keep doing that rating and reviewing, it lets people know that we're out there. More and more people will find us. And I also ask you to do us this huge favor. You're not alone. You've got friends and relatives and workers that love the paranormal. Share our show. Just share it. Let them know about it. Post it. Tag your friends in it when you see it on our social media pages. If there's an episode that really rocks your socks, tag it, link it, whatever you want. Share it with as many people as you possibly can. We want to continue to grow this audience, which is already huge. And we thank you guys for doing that and being such a big part of this. Love to talk about the strange phenomena, right? We're talking about ghosts this week. We're talking about aliens. We're talking a little bit later on this week about possessed playthings and haunted toys. You guys probably know this, and if you don't, and relatively new listeners here, I've been a location scout for the TV series Ghost Adventures for about 3.5 years, and I was part of their episode at the Stardust Ranch where we went to look into this case that had cryptids and ghosts and interdimensional beings reported and aliens and UFOs. And I actually went out and put myself on the mountain by myself where they have seen lights in these motherships. And I want to have this experience. I want to see, I want to believe, in the words of Fox Mulder. However, you start talking to guests like our guest tonight, and maybe I shouldn't be so willing to put myself in those positions. Audrey Starborn Hewins is our guest. You can find more information about her work at starbornsupport.org. That's starbornsupport.org. Audrey is an identical twin born in 1973. She is a lifelong alien abductee and experiencer, as well as her sister. And we've been talking about some of these moments that she's had. You know, for people like me, Audrey, that want to have these experiences and want to see the inside of a spacecraft or meet an alien face to face, what is your advice to people like me that want to do that? Do you think that's insane, or do you think, no, if you go into it with good intentions and put forth that effort, you're going to be rewarded?
Well, I think, you know, be careful what you wish for, because once that's open, it never stops. You know, when you become an experiencer, it's something that it's going to change your life profoundly. It will change everything, everything you believe, everything you thought you knew. You're going to have to relearn everything. You're going to get pissed off because a lot of what you thought you knew was lies. You know, it's just something that's going to totally alter your reality and make it, it's almost like taking the pill in the Matrix. You know, once you do it, you can't come back, but it is very enlightening. And, you know, of course, it's scary at first, and you know, it is a process. And you know, a lot of people, we have a gathering once a year, will come there and have experiences. So, you know, that's, you know, it's changed quite a few people's lives just coming and being around us. So, you know, it is something that you know, does happen when we gather in groups. And it's more and more frequent now. It seems like, you know, something, we're on the cusp of something that, you know, it's really, we're really there. It's you know, almost time, I think, for the world to learn this reality. And it seems, you know, more and more to be pointing that way every day with everything. I mean, just, you know, the TV programming, the, you know, the conversations on the radio and TV shows, actually, The Walking Dead had over a million people see a UFO, and they, you know, posted that yesterday, and they gave the scene, and there is something flying right by behind Rick at very high speeds. So that was pretty cool. You know, so they're there. I mean, I've got a whole photo album on Facebook of the ones that are above me.
Yeah, the only problem with the Walking Dead scenario for me is, first of all, I think from a distance, when you see these things, I've seen airplanes from a distance that look like the cigar-shaped craft.
Yeah.
I've also seen other ones that look really weird bat-wing-like until they get overhead, and then you realize it's a plane. I also know... Mm-hmm. that they like to put little Easter eggs in those episodes. And there has been talk, and Easter eggs for our listeners that don't know is the things that may tell something about the future of the episodes or reflect back to a different part of it. And there has been some talk that maybe what caused the dead to come to life was alien interference, much like the Walking Dead. Yeah, much like, the Night of the Living Dead movies, there's that idea that maybe it came back in a spacecraft. So, that could play into the future way down the line. So I, you know, when it shows up accidentally on a TV show, I don't put too much stock into it, but it's people.
Yeah,
like
you never know. And
it.
there was one too, I think in Jaws, in one of the scenes, there was a UFO in Jaws too. I think that was the other movie. I think you can Google that and find that. And that one's pretty interesting. It's more of a, you know, classic UFO, but you know, when you think back then, why would they put a UFO in there? You know, so, I mean, now it seems to be, you know, more and more mainstream. It could be, you know, drip feeding the public, you know. But there's been slow release. I think it's like a soft disclosure, including, you know, all the habitable planets that they just found and, you know, little things like that. And you know, Edgar Mitchell, who's just recently passed, bless his soul, was, of course, an astronaut who was very outspoken. And there's now an organization, the Edgar Mitchell's Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters, who I'm really close to, too. And that was another strange scenario on how we got put together. I mean, we could just do a show every night and never cover all the strangeness that is my life, you know, and everyone that's involved with Starborn and so forth. So it is... it's like there's some kind of a movement starting, and we're not starting. It's being put together for us.
Right.
Now, I was talking about the visions starting.
Right, yeah, the messages and the visions that you were getting. So I want to I want to get back into that and let me know a little bit about what that was like. Were you getting these messages, like, during sleep patterns? Were you getting them as visions while you were awake? How would this happen for you?
There was both. There was all kinds. I mean, it was almost like if I didn't listen to it one way, they'd do it another way. I mean, one day I was just, you know, in one of those moods, just kind of depressed, you know, staring off at the wall, and I had a mirror on the wall, and it was, you know, what I now know is scrying. I didn't know at the time, but I was just kind of staring at it as, you know, Nostradamus supposedly used water. You can use mirrors, crystal balls, same thing. And it was kind of trance-like. It was in between, and I was just spacing out, really just depressed about everything, about, you know, my life and my sister, and we hadn't talked. I mean, it was the first time ever. I'm going to cry just talking about it, but so, you know, it was all of a sudden, this was the first one. I was staring into this mirror, just spacing out, thinking about, you know, damn, how did I end up here? And all of a sudden, it was like I was watching TV. You know, it was just this total story just started playing in this mirror, and I'm watching, and I didn't want to move my eyes. I'm trying to stay as still as possible. I had no idea what was going on, but it was this mountain, and there was this woman in a long, flowing white dress with long brown hair, kind of glowing. She was climbing up a mountain. And at the top of the mountain was a lotus. And I had no idea the significance of lotus or what it was. I didn't even know what kind of flower it was until later on in life. Again, I didn't study this. I wasn't obsessed by it. It was sci-fi, you know, what people think a lot of times is, you know, this person's just, you know, prone to to this, but no, you know, it was something I didn't want to think about. So this woman is this very, I guess now I can say, angelic woman was climbing this mountain and going towards this lotus flower, and right next to the right next to her was this path that was, you know, stairs, and she could have just walked right up to that lotus flower, you know. And that was something that I couldn't understand at the time, but now it's you know, almost obvious, you know, the easy path isn't always the way, you know, sometimes you're going to struggle. And the lotus, I still haven't come to terms with what that means. There's been many different meanings given to me. I don't know. It's definitely very significant in a lot of spiritual, you know, belief systems. So I don't know what it is, the transformation, I don't know. But then I kind of shook that off. I was like, wow, you know, what was that? And then I would get, I guess what's known as remote viewing now, and kind of go and you know, be where my sister is, and all of a sudden be in the room and know what she's doing. And all of a sudden I had this vision of a baby, and it was a girl, and I was just like, oh my God. And the first time I picked up the phone in a couple of years to call her was right as I saw this. I picked it up. I said, Debbie, you're pregnant. It's a girl. You've got to keep her. She's going to be special. And I hung up. And she didn't say anything. And I didn't hear anything until, you know, a while later. She had, must have just gotten pregnant, because it was probably, you know, a good month or so after that she called me and said, Audrey, how did you know? You know, and I was just like, well, you know, it was shown to me. And they would give me a lot of it. I wish I wrote down, and if I knew then what I know now, I would have had journals detailing all this stuff. But I was just thinking I was going crazy. You know, what the hell is going on? You know, who am I? What's going on? I felt completely different. My focus was in limbo, you know, but I was no longer interested in what I used to be interested in. There was something that was pulling me somewhere. I didn't know where. It was just very confusing. And I get like these little messages, and it would be, you know, spiritual stuff. And if I didn't listen, and one time I'm telling the guy I was with what's going on, and he's like, whatever. And we walk by a TV that's on the floor. It wasn't even plugged in. And the television turns on. This guy's in the TV saying exactly what I just said, like, will you believe it if it's on TV type of thing. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. So I'm like, okay, I'm really cracking up, and just kind of was like, I got to get out of here. I did end up having a relationship with Kip, the one who was in the ocean with me for a while, and that's, you know, a whole other story too, but we weren't together anymore at that time when I had left. And because I'm also a targeted individual with my lab and stuff, so that's a whole other show. We won't go there in this one, but we're going to talk about good stuff. So I eventually was, you know, shown just the road home. I needed to go to New England again, and I got my car, and I just drove. You know, I grabbed my daughter, left everything, didn't take anything, didn't want anything. That was my old life. Took my animals and hit the road. I didn't even know where I was going, but I ended up in Maine at my mom's lake house, where I had recovered after a really, really bad accident, which wasn't an accident, which again was another show. So I knew I liked it there. It was comfortable. That's where I healed. So I went there, and that's where I never left. You know, and this was in 2006, so it was 3 years out there. With the near death and the reawakening, and death brought me to life, basically. So I knew that, you know, there was something different going on. It was very confusing, almost like the old me was dead, did die in that ocean, and I was just discovering who I was. And I eventually found a place, bought a place, and then moved in. And it wasn't very long after that I had the visit that altered my direction and put me on my life's purpose now. And this was on November 5th of 2006. And it was late night, November 5th, early November 6th. And I was in bed, as most people are. And I something made me wake up, and I noticed that the room was filling with that blue light, and it was not quite the same. Mm-hmm. Didn't have the same energy feel. I was like, wow, you know, this doesn't feel scary. You know, this isn't the same energy as the grays bring. This is something that I've never experienced before. And then I watched this woman materialize in front of me as if out of thin air. She was beautiful. I wish I could draw her. But it was, I think, the woman that I saw climbing up the mountain or somebody very similar. She had the same glow. She had long, dark hair in a glowing light blue robe. And, you know, I've got a picture of her in my Facebook albums that I drew as best I could. And she was very comforting. I wasn't scared. I sat right up. You know, it was so different than the grays. I wasn't crawling out of my skin trying to hurt them and, you know, just freaking out. So I welcomed this one, and she spoke to me, and she said, you're ready. And I sat up, and I said, well, you know, ready for what? She says, you're going to start a group, and you're going to call it Starborn Support. She said, someday the world will know who you are. She said, you will help many. And everyone involved will become ambassadors to the planet. And that's it. And I was like, well, you know, what does that mean? And there was no further instruction. I had no idea what to do. And you know that she dematerialized as fast as she materialized. And I was freaking out and got my journal and I wrote things down and I tried to draw her as much as I could because I'd learned that you have to do it right away. So I didn't know what to do, and I didn't really feel like I wanted to do it because I didn't even know what it was. And so I said, well, what do I do? So I got up the next day, and which was November 6th, and I started a MySpace page and a phone number. I said, there, I did it. You know, what was I going to say? No, I got something better to do. You know, so that was it. I just, that's all I did. I felt like, you know, this, I didn't know what would happen, but that's all that needed to happen. And, you know, it just grew instantly, almost overnight, and I didn't even know. I think Matt Moniz wrote our intro for the group, which was great, you know, because he knew exactly what it was going to be. You know, it was just the strangest thing, is you know, that relationship. But so he wrote the intro, and you know, it just one after another, the experiencers just came out of the woodwork, and I ended up, you know, working with them and expanding and needing, you know, psychiatrists and people that deal with PTSD and pulling in a team. And, you know, over the 10 years, it's been 10 years that are, you know, just turned 10 years in November of 2016. So, you know, it was, it just grew overnight, and it was something that was almost effortless. And I just kind of did it naturally, like I've just been doing it all my life, no idea. People came into my life and my organization in very strange ways, all of them, you know, I mean, Kathy Martin and just, you know, everyone that I worked closely with was almost, you know, it was something strange happened. You know, Matt, I think, is probably still got the strangest, you know, but just a string of strange happenings. And we went to Roswell, and we were going to do Night Watch Radio with Todd Sheets live from Roswell. And I had done the show a few times, and I don't know if you know Todd, but he's great. And some weird, really weird things happened while we were on the radio. And it was like, you know, there was interference, somebody breaking into the line. They just wouldn't let us have a complete interview in the beginning. And so I went out to Roswell, and we were going to record live from Roswell, and it was a special show. And so we were at the hotel getting ready to record, and it was on a cell phone at first, and of course, you know, it was breaking into the line, and you'd hear all the noise. In fact, Todd has it on his Night Watch radio website under special archives, just a clip of it, because the whole thing was unable to be recovered. But and he said, well, hang up and use the hotel landline. They can't get to that one. And it took 5 minutes, and they had interrupted that one. And, you know, we had some strange people following us in Roswell, and some really strange stuff began to happen. And It was like everywhere we turned, you know, people were in our way saying things like they knew who we were. And there was just really strange stuff going on. And my sister and I and my best friend Tammy were just, you know, like, what's going on? There's some strange stuff. And my sister and I had an experience at the hotel, I believe it was that night. And Debbie had been introduced to one of the, we call them Pleiadian type, because those are the type that best describe what we've seen, because, you know, people's renditions of them, that's who they appear to be. And it's easier to say, you know, there's, you know, the classifications, the Nordics, and, you know, so the Pleiadian people are the closest to what we've encountered. So she met a blonde Pleiadian with amazing eyes, and she asked, you know, who are you? And he said, you'll see me with Travis Walton. And we didn't know who he was at the time. We had no clue. Again, we weren't into this, and we didn't study it. Even when we started working with it, it was just, you know, things happened, and we just let it occur naturally. We didn't study it. We didn't have any teachers. We just did it. And so we didn't know what that meant, or, you know, really who he was. So we went to the museum the next day in Roswell. And Debbie's turning the corner, and there's an exhibit there for Travis. And if you've been there, you know what I'm talking about. And there's a very famous picture that I believe Mike Rogers drew. And it's of the blonde being that was in Travis Walton's abduction, standing there with a helmet on. And he's looking at Travis, and Debbie freaked out. She said, that's him. That's the guy that I saw last night. And you know, and I looked at him, and that was a very good, the closest I'd ever seen to the blonde that had pulled me out of the water. So there's that connection that started, and this was in 2007. So we just kind of like, wow, okay. So, of course, we looked up, you know, Travis's story, and we were like, wow, you know, this is, you know, that type. And you know, the blonde there seems to be, you know, the one that you've encountered. And
you seem so calm about all of this. You know, Travis had a one-time abduction. You've had a lifelong uh-huh. abduction. You've been sexually uh-huh. violated. How is it that you just sound so, this happens?
Well, you know, I think it's just I've been desensitized because I'm helping others. I have my moments. Believe me, ask Matt. He's my man that I call and break down. In fact, just a couple of days ago, and he'll just say, you feel better? Yes, and that's why I call you. You know, so I do have Matt, and Kathy Martin will get it to, you know, people that will help me, but I'm the one that people come to for help, you know. So this is an assignment that they wanted me to do, and it's been 10 years, and I've lived through, seen, experienced, talked to, heard it all, you know. So for me, it's my life. It's normal. I've always been an experiencer. I still have no idea what that means. Don't get me wrong. There is still, the more I find out, the more questions you get. And this rabbit hole goes so deep and takes so many lefts. You know, it's just insane when you get into this. But being submerged in it constantly is, you know, eventually you just have to say, okay, this is what I need to do. And, you know, I don't want to call it a strength because it's not. It's just an acceptance of, you know, this is why I'm here. They've asked me to do this. It's important. So, you know, I just kind of move on. And helping those people that come to me, that like I was back when I went looking for MUFON, you know, and found Matt. I remember that. And I remember there not being anybody there. So this is why I exist. You know, this is, you know, I am the person that those people come to. And, you know, I can't be a shivering, terrified mess helping them, you know. So it is, I'm not going to say it's always pleasant, because I do, like I said, have my times, and it's a lot to carry.
Do you ever confront these aliens? Do you ever go at them and tell them, enough's enough, leave me alone? And if so, do they do? How do they react?
Uh-huh. Yeah, in fact, I've got a journal entry that's available. I think it's on my website, but it was of the Greys. And the Greys are the ones that really, you know, I feel like no love, you know, not really love. There's a lot of bad energies there. There's a lot of bad memories. You know, even if they're just the doctors and scientists and are the ones that have to do the hands-on stuff, okay, but still, you know, don't touch me. So, or call me and say, you'll be here at 5 and I'll meet you. You know, I just don't, it's the creepiness. It's the, you know, pulling you out without knowing. And, you know, that's what pisses me off. And one time I was able to fight the paralysis. I don't know why, but there was 4 of them surrounding there's 2 on each side of my bed and one taller one that seems to be the doctor standing in front of me. And I was able to fight the paralysis and reach up and actually grab the one to my right up on by my head by the throat. And as soon as I did, I heard in my head, it was telepathic, and it said, watch out for the mother. And, I mean, his throat felt like a little roll of quarters. I mean, it was so easy. I could have, you know, really hurt this thing. And, you know, I've heard of people that have killed them and hurt them. And, you know, so it was, I immediately let go because of the voice in my head. And then I got up. I was able to get up and take a few steps to make it from my bed to my door, which is probably about 4.5-5 feet from my bed. So I got to the door, opened it up. There was a couple of little ones outside the door, and that's when I felt a burning sensation. And this was not the typical paralysis. This was, if I even thought about moving, my body was going to feel like it was on fire. It was horrible, and that's, you know, that took care of me, and I was, again, subdued. And then for the few times afterwards, the same one that I grabbed actually hit me in the head the next time he saw me, like, you know, he held a grudge, and they would use this burning paralysis, like as if to be, you know, punished, or, you know, you misbehave, this is what you get. I don't know what the message was. I mean, I'm sure they just don't want to be killed. You know, I understand we could very easily hurt them if we were able to.
Well, poor aliens. They don't want to be hurt and they don't want to be killed. Right. Well, yeah, but you
right,
were a
yeah.
child who didn't want to have.
You look at
you didn't want to have your eggs
right.
violated and be molested,
right.
but they're not worried about
mm-hmm.
that. Yeah, what a strange sensation
it,
to kind
it,
of
it
be
is.
In.
And, you know, for many years, of course, I was so angry about that and so pissed off. But the more I've learned and the more I've experienced, the more it seems, you know, there are good and bad. There's definitely a war of good and evil going on out there. And there's different agendas. And once the more angelic or Pleiadian race stepped in, things just began to really change in my thoughts and feelings about what's going on changed. You know, it is about this planet, and this planet is definitely not going to survive, you know, and it's because of one species. So, you know, it would be very easy for them to come in and just, you know, put a virus out and just wipe everybody out. I mean, they can do that. I don't see why not. Or, you know, get even more violent if they wanted to. I think they could even cause earthquakes, natural disasters, but, you know, of course, that would affect all life. But at the rate we're going, we're wiping out life so fast. Fukushima right now, the whole entire Pacific I don't think there's a chance for it. You know, and they're really playing that down and don't talk a lot about it. But when you look and try to find the research of, you know, their last mission down to the bottom of the Pacific was basically, you know, a big pile of bones and shells and just wasting away old life, you know, death. So it is the big picture that we have to look at. It is, you know, they could come in and just, like I said, wipe us out. They do show signs of benevolence. I mean, they tuck us back in. They remove our memories to the best of their ability. I mean, if they didn't care, why would they do that? They obviously understand the fragile psyche of the human mind. You know, and it's all in how you look at it. When we go and we take an animal out of the wilderness, or we take a tiger and we sedate it so we don't hurt it, it doesn't hurt us, we're doing it for a good reason. You know, we, of course, there's people that come and just kill them, but that'd be the other agenda. So but how you look at it as a whole, is your understanding of your personal situation as well as others. And the more I talk, and there's actually been some research through Free. You should have Ray Hernandez talk about that sometime, because they're really coming up with some amazing results. And, you know, their statistics are, you know, starting to come in, and they've interviewed, I believe, over 3,000 experiencers in a three-phase, very thought-out interview. They're working with Rudy Shield, and, of course, Edgar Mitchell was on board before he died, and some of the top minds on the planet to do this and to try to get to what's going on. And again, I was introduced to Ray through a series of experiences. And Kathy Martin had told me, look, you need to talk to this guy, Ray, and he's starting this organization, and you just need to talk to him. She wouldn't tell me why. So, and then a few others were like, you got to talk to this guy, Ray. So finally, I get a phone call, and it was Ray, and I just kind of let him talk, and he was a new experiencer. He's a lawyer out of Miami, and this just kind of life-altering event happened, and he's on this mission now, much like me, and they want him to do this. And I'm just listening to it, and it was fascinating because it was so similar. And then he says, and then they show me this wheel, and I said, stop right there. And I said, what did you say? And he said, they showed me this wheel. I said, hold on. And I went into my office and I dusted off a journal, and there was a drawing of this wheel that they had shown me and that I obsessed about for a few years. In fact, I think it's in that special archive I mentioned, the wheel, with Todd Sheets. But I gave up talking about it because I never heard anybody that had seen this wheel. So he says, this wheel, I go in and I have this drawing, and I sent it to him, email or text, whatever it was. And he was like, oh, my God, you know, that's it. So it was something that, you know, we were meant to work together. You know, they showed us these same things. We're on similar paths. And all of a sudden, you know, we're inseparable, working together. And that's, you know, the rest is history. So they're doing some phenomenal research and getting some results that that will, you know, quell the right and left brain people. So this is something that is so huge, and it affects us all, of course, on many, many different levels. It is biblical. It is spiritual. It is extraterrestrial. It is interdimensional. It is so much that, you know, when people finally get the answers, including myself, because I don't have them, we're just going to, everything will just, you know, be like, wow, you know, this is the most amazing time to be alive and to be here, if you think about it, you know, because of what's going on all around us. And, you know, people that doubt, I just tell them, well, you know, you want to experience, just, you know, come hang out with us, and, you know, it'll be, you know, satisfied usually. So that's, you know, it is what it is. And people, whether they believe it or not, if they don't believe it, it doesn't make it not true. It doesn't make it not true. This is real. This is going on to millions of people. Stephen Bassett actually came up with an equation with an estimated calculation of how many experiencers there actually are on this planet. And, you know, just in the United States, it's millions, you know. And I think he's released the equation for the experiencers. But he did a great presentation at my conference about it. And, you know, the science is there. It's starting to catch up with the technology and with the belief systems, and it all has to tie in.
Let me ask you this. There's so many of these experiences these abduction-like scenarios where your mind is wiped, you're put back in your room, you get this sense. It sounds to me a lot like ghost encounters at night as well. Do you think some people that think their house is haunted are truly dealing with aliens?
Yes, definitely. It's all related. It's all connected. Even, you know, the Sasquatch, the interdimensional, it's all related.
That's all kind of a related idea, the supernatural. But I mean specifically, do you think what people are misunderstanding or believing as ghosts are actually aliens, either cloaked or around them?
Yes, and like myself, when I was saved by that being, I thought it was a ghost. You know, that was my first paranormal.
Right.
You know, I went right there. So, and then, you know, of course, the angel phenomenon comes in, and this is very important because that's very real as well. So, it doesn't matter what you believe or what religion you are. There is some truth in all religions, I think. You know, it's just been so twisted and altered to control the population, to divide, to keep us all, you know, separated. And this is, you know, what's going on big time right now, and just in this country since the election. I mean, look at the separation and division of everyone. I mean, everybody's just arguing and fighting. I mean, it's just a distraction, you know, definitely. From what? You know, you got to question what would make them want to create that much of total chaos on the planet.
Have you found anything is effective in keeping these alien predators away from you? I mean, evoking the name of Christ, holy water, aluminum foil hats, and I don't mean that funny. I mean it sincerely.
No, you know, that's funny that you asked that, because, you know, the aluminum hat would be more for the MyLab and for the MKUltra mind control stuff coming from humans, you know, from the black ops, the so-called, we just call them MID, you know, it sums them all up, whoever is targeting us. And yes, I've been targeted big time. There's been several attempts on my life. It's that deep, and there is a black ops, some kind of organization that does monitor and control. But the EMF frequencies and the different psychotronic weapons that they have can very well be minimized by tinfoil or some kind of, you know, protective reflective that reflects like the microwave weapons and stuff. If you put tinfoil in the microwave, you watch the energy just bounce off it, right? So there is something to that, but it's not related so much to ET, I don't think, as it is to the MyLab. Now, MyLab would be military abductions. Now, MyLab could very well be the negative encounters, the grave, you know, they could be working with them, or they have very elaborate virtual reality simulations, drugs, you know, I mean, it's been going on for many, many years. I mean, the Nazis were working with this type of thing, even, you know, through LSD and different methods of, you know, achieving the mind, you know, just taking over the mind and to project things. And there's so many different things going on here that, you know, like I said, it could be a new show every day.
Right. But is there anything effective to deflect the aliens at all? Have you found anything that does work?
Never heard of anybody having any luck doing that. I mean, there's, of course, the people that want to believe, you know, mm-hmm. that, yes, they fear Jesus, but maybe one does. But what about the angelic ones who may be working for Jesus? You know, you got to think of maybe it you know, keeps one away, but, you know, how do you know, and how do you know what works?
Do you have children?
I do.
Do you believe that they've been abducted?
Well, there's been, you know, I know through statistics, but I don't like to talk about it.
I don't want statistics. I just want your opinion. Do you believe that they've been abducted?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, okay. Of course.
They're doing the same type of testing on your kids that they've done on you?
No. I think we're at a different level now. It's, you know, they're more at the final stages instead of preparation stages to whatever's coming, you know? So it's like with us,
Do you feel that your children have been altered in any way? Is there any chance that they may have alien DNA?
Yeah, and I believe that I do. I believe my sister does. We've got several things that are going on with us. Well, I do, you know, some strange stuff happening. But yes, I do believe that something's been altered, and through admission of my own parents saying, you know, something happened during conception. So, you know, that's something that, you know, really, really I think about all the time, especially now. Like, you know, there's so many questions and so much confusion, and there's still fear there, but it's fear of not understanding, you know, and not knowing. So
do your children have any special medical issues or anything that you found have been connected to other abductees?
Yeah, my son's never been sick, never. You know, he's now in the Army, but I think the first time he got sick, or the only time he got sick, was after they gave him some kind of a shot there, you know, and that just triggered some kind of sickness, which you got to wonder what the hell they're doing, but it's a whole other show, too. But he, you know, recovered very fast, and, you know, much like, you know, Travis Walton's never been sick since the, you know, since the encounter, so it does seem like the kids of experiencers are more gifted, you know, very high IQs, very healthy, different kind of abilities. And then there's, you know, those that are gifted in other ways, you know, with, you know, then people call it special needs, but it's not. They're, you know, like the ADHD is very, very high in experiencers' children because they're not wired to learn the lies that are being thrown at them. You know, they've got this different information. And I actually, when I was on a craft, no, it's been in the last 10 years since I started Starborn, but it was a gray craft. And at first, they'll try to make you believe that, you know, you're in your house or you're in a normal situation and they can put a screen memory as you're living it. But once you realize that something's strange, it kind of melts away and the reality is right in front of you. I was in what turned out to be a craft, but they made me feel and believe like I was sitting in a doctor's office. The doctor, a gray-haired man, came and he waved me in. He kind of, you know, did his hand signals, come on in, and it was my turn, and I sat up on the table there, the examination table, and I'm looking around, and I looked at his face, and then I looked down, and he had this belt on. Now, hanging from his belt were these very strange tools made of very strange metal that I'd never seen before. So I said, oh, I said, I think I know you. And he just kind of nodded. And I said, you're not from here. And he nodded again. And then and I said, you're the doctor, and that's, you know, what I called the tall alien, gray, that had been coming for me all my life. There's, you know, he's always there with some smaller ones working for him. So the the screening just went away, and I was on a craft with this gray alien looking at me, and he was very calm, and so was I. And I asked him straight out, I said, what is, you know, what's going on? What are you doing? And he said that he's altering our DNA, that they're altering our DNA for enlightenment purposes. And he left it at that. I turned around and there was some kind of a crazy machine on the wall. And it was, seemed to be counting backwards, these strange symbols. It seemed to be a clock of some sort. And I just looked at him and there was some writing on it. And I asked him, you know, what is it? And he said, war. And that's all. And then that's all I remember of that. There was another time where I was in a classroom scenario, and this was with the more human type. And there was, you know, others with me. It was a full classroom. And I looked around and there was different planets hanging, like little solar system mobiles. And there was, you know, like a classroom, regular classroom, and he was teaching us. And he let me ask a question, and he actually let me remember the answer. And I asked him, what is the point of teaching us all of this important information, if only to be forgotten when we're returned? And he told me that everything we need to know lay dormant inside us and will activate when the time comes. So the so-called, you know, junk DNA, or, you know, we only use a very minimal percent of, you know, our brains, and there's so much storage, if you think of it as a computer, that, you know, there's a lot of stuff being stored in experiencers, and we've got the information there. So basically, you know what?
But if they're altering our DNA, shouldn't that be something we can be tested for and see that there is a genetic change, that there is something off?
Mm-hmm. I believe so. And, you know, my medical records have since disappeared. I've sent when I sent in my ancestry DNA to get done, it came back, and none of my family was in it. It wasn't me or I'm not who I thought I was. You know, it was just very bizarre. And there's no medical records. I've got a strange blood condition right now that they are trying to identify that they've never seen before. So we're going through some physical changes now. And
right. Well, some of those DNA tests, I know the ones for like Ancestry.com, they just did a special on one of the news stories recently. They took identical triplets and identical quadruplets, and their numbers were coming back skewed. They're from the same egg.
Yeah.
It should be the same exact numbers. So
exactly.
I think there's still a flaw in that ointment.
I do, too, and I really would love to sit with somebody that could do that right in front of me without, you know, altering or any chance of changing results so I know that that's me, you know. I'd love to do that. Of course, that takes money and means and somebody who's willing to risk their reputation to do it, you know, because, of course, you know, most people would probably say, well, it'll be secret or, you know, that, you know, that's why it's so important that professionals come forward and get on board, because there's so many that we work with confidentially that are involved in this. So I think, you know, when it's their time, I think they will step
forward. Do you run across, doing what you do and helping people, do you run across many people that are dealing with specifically mental issues, and it really has nothing to do with aliens? Or does one beget the other? The alien issues can trigger mental issues.
Sure. I thought at first that I'd have a bunch of wackos calling me. You know, I really did. I just didn't know what the hell to expect. I'm like, you know, this could be something. That's why I had people that I could, you know, maybe talk to that were mental health professionals that were willing to help me. But it turned out, you know, that occasionally we'd get one, but we'd help them too. You know, we would suggest that they see this person and we'd find somebody in their area, and it would be, you know, get a mental health screening first. Of course, we always suggest that, you know, go get a screening. We're not saying you're crazy, but go rule that out. I mean, you want to. This is something that you want to do, you know. And, of course, we ask people if they're honest or not. It's up to them if they do drugs or drink. And, you know, we can sometimes tell, you know, if somebody's drunk or high. And, of course, we refer them to, you know, AA, NA, or somebody that's professional with that. So we have all those resources when we need them. So we never turn anybody away. I wouldn't want that done to me. It had been done to me through another organization that I've heard, you know, does that to a lot of experiencers. So that's not going to happen with us. You know, it's a safe place. It's 100% confidential. We have support groups. And, you know, the people that do the best are the people that are the most scared to come in at first. And, you know, they start off in the corner, and then, you know, it's just so amazing to be around others that understand them, that they just end up, you know, usually doing most of the talking and most of the healing during that session. And, you know, that show, there's a new show called People of Earth that's actually, you know, based on our group. So, you know, we weren't expecting it, but I really liked the show, so I don't care if they, you know, stole a few things. So that's fine. They're doing it in a nice, humorous way that's not harming anyone so far.
Is there any kind of numbers on abductees and suicide? Do we find that a lot of people that do believe that they are being abducted are dealing with a higher level of suicide, or do you think they're more adjusted because of what they're dealing with and the knowledge and insights that they've been given?
That's a good question. And, you know, it's probably one that's going to be hard to get numbers on, because obviously if the person had successfully killed themselves, it would be hard to, you know, talk to them, but family members.
Right, but if you're, like, your organization, you have a lot of people in the organization that report to you. Do you get reports back that, oh, well, this one has passed now, or this one committed suicide? I mean, sure. Anything like that, so you have an idea of, this is an epidemic.
I haven't had any that I can, you know, pull right out, and nothing jumps out. So, no, that's surprising, too. There is, you know, cases when you get into the other side that I've started to dive into, which is the mind control and my lab and stuff, where people are forced to, you know, using mind control, do things that they wouldn't otherwise do, and some have died, yes. So, you know, it depends. And, you know, there's a fine line where people are talking about alien abduction. And we find that most of the time when it's really traumatic and really, you know, they're getting hurt or scared, that it's more of a MyLab situation than an actual ET. But there may be actual ETs working with whoever these people are. But, you know, there's definitely something going on that, you know, isn't spoken of, or, you know, that the man behind the curtain is really there. You know, he's up to something. So, you know, it's a sad thing, and that's a very dangerous area to dive into. But, you know, throughout the years, I found that the ETs will, or angels, or whoever, whatever you want to call them, will, you know, step in. And save me. You know, it's been twice now that they've saved my life that I know of, and one questionable accident where my car was moved under a bridge, and I was the second car to a 7-car pileup. So the cop was like, "Well, how did you get over here?" I said, "Well, I don't know. I'd like to know that too." But, you know, I was busy helping the motorcycle guy that had been, you know, smeared across the road. I was giving him a blanket, but I was able to tell the cop what it was. It was a van that had hit the cement barrier in between, of course, on Route 128, the worst part of Boston. She hit with the corner of her front end and began to spin. And it was like slow motion. She was coming at me, and I saw what she looked like, and I understood what was going on. And then the next thing I know, I'm in, you know, tucked safely over, you know, under a bridge, and I turn around, and there's a pileup with a motorcycle and 6 cars. So, you know, the cop, and I was the second car from the starting car, and that van had taken off. So I was able to describe the van. They did catch the woman. You know, I drove off, you know, just, you know, things like that. Or, you know, how many times have they intervened? But I know of 2 times, one in the ocean and one where I was actually physically taken by, you know, humans, you know, they come in when I'm going to die. So it makes me wonder what the hell they were going to do to me. So, you know, it's something where you have to have complete faith. You know, like I said, it's not something I chose, but right. It seems like something that I'm meant to do. Almost, you know, people call it destiny or your life's mission or whatever it is very strong and something that, you know, I will fight for and believe in and do what I can, you know. And it seems to be more and more people on that same path, you know, and we all come across each other. And now Travis Walton's girlfriend. So, yeah, Travis's girlfriend now. I mean, things just work out in strange ways.
Well, and we love Travis. He's always been a great friend to our show and in person. I love Travis Walton. He's one of the nicest humans I've ever had a chance to meet. And I thank you very much for coming on this evening, Audrey, and sharing your insights and your story with us. Thank you so much for doing that.
All right. No problem. Anytime. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, I look forward to listening to the show, and good luck with it.
Great. And please give our best to Travis Walton, who also appeared with us on that episode of Ghost Adventures when we were out in Arizona.
Great,
he mentioned
highly of you guys. Loves you guys. Yeah.
He's a good guy.
He likes that show. Yeah.
So, well, thank you very much. That's it for tonight, folks. We'll be back. Remember, I'm hosting Coast to Coast AM this Saturday night. So make sure you go check out coasttocoastam.com for information, updates, and ways to listen. If you go to coasttocoastam.com/stations, you will be able to find stations in your city, state, and around the United States and around the world that you can tune in and check it out. I'll be broadcasting live from KNSI out in St. Cloud, Minnesota. So if you look up KNSI in St. Cloud, Minnesota, you can actually stream right from their website and be able to listen to the show. And remember to keep up with all the great topics that George Norrie covers and all the other fantastic fill-in hosts on Coast to Coast AM. It is the best in overnight talk radio, and we thank you for listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader. Special thanks to our guest, Audrey Starborn-Hewins. And we'll be back again tomorrow with more Beyond the Darkness.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.